welcome to the next episode of the Can Marketing Save the Planet podcast. And today, Gemma and I are thrilled to be joined by Alessandro Di Trapani, who is the co-founder of Grub Club. Alessandro, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me. Very excited to be here.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you. And we met at the Sky Zero Funds, where you guys won the big prize. So congratulations on all of that.
Thank you. Thanks. Yeah, it was a really great day. I can't say that the next day was equally as great given how my head felt, but it was awesome. Awesome accolade for us. We're really happy.
Fantastic. So quite a bit of celebrating and very justified. So what was interesting, given our podcast is all about educating marketers around sustainability, best practices, marketing sustainability, sustainable marketing. We're also very keen to bring on board and talk about wonderful products, services, innovations that are happening in the product and services space. So hence why we were thrilled to have Grub Club here. So let's start with an introduction to yourself and Grub Club then, and how you got started.
Yeah, so I think it's an interesting one. I mean, my background is certainly not in pet food traditionally. I came from a traditional kind of finance and economics background, did a little bit of work in consulting, but spent a majority of my early career working in commodity trading, actually. So was very much focused on the numbers, sitting in front of a bunch of screens every day. Kind of saw an opportunity in Kenya, actually. The company I worked for previously was very focused on the African continent and the agricultural value chain across Africa. And I spent the best part of 2 years in Kenya building a kind of platform providing short-term loans, financial services and crop insurance, other products and services to smallholder farmers. And I think that 2 year experience of kind of throwing the Bloomberg terminal out the window and then trading that for a pickup truck, driving around Kenya, trying to build a product, kind of opened up my eyes to elements of business outside of just the finance function, really. Yep. And I found that fascinating. How do you acquire customers? How do you build a product or a platform or a service? And I moved over to the UK to go to business school. And while I was at London Business School, started working on the Grub Club concept. And it all stemmed out of a article, I think it was in the Wall Street Journal, this fascinating woman based out in the US who said she wants to create the beyond meat of pet food. Mm-hmm. And we thought that was really interesting. Started looking at what an alternative protein pet food could look like. We looked at plant-based, you know, it's similar to the kind of human food alternative meats, if you will.
Yeah.
But kind of realized that that wasn't necessarily the best from a veterinary perspective, didn't quite have the backing from the veterinary profession, and you can't feed cats a plant-based diet, so they obligate carnivores. So essentially that would have cut out half of the market for us. We looked at cultivated meat or lab-grown meat, which from the onset just looked like it was potentially cost prohibitive. So we moved away from that and then looked at insect protein, which was really interesting, a really interesting space. I think, you know, gathering a lot of momentum, the supply chain globally is gathering a lot of investment capital and attention because of insects' role in potentially helping us fix our food systems globally through a number of different applications. So we found the sustainability side of things of insect protein, as well as the feasibility from a supply chain perspective, really compelling. And then we knew, of course, though, all of these sustainability benefits and all of that wouldn't really mean much if the nutrition and health side of things didn't stack up. Because you own a cat, Gemma has a dog, you know you're not going to buy anything for your pet unless you're sure that it would be good for your pet, right? And healthy. So, you know, we felt that that was an absolute must. And fortunately, There's a lot of veterinary support and well-documented health benefits of insect protein for cats and dogs. So that kind of then started the journey of building Grub Club, which started as a entrepreneurship class project in a business school in the UK to, you know, morphing over the last 2 to 3 years into what it is today. So that's a bit of a nutshell of the journey to date.
If we look at the challenge overall
with regards to pet food, we read a really staggering statistic on your website, which is that 20% of the world's fish and meat is consumed by our pets, which is absolutely staggering. And we know that the impact of agriculture, big agriculture and the meat industry, the impact it has on the planet is absolutely huge, isn't it? And you guys obviously doing something to try and, you know, mitigate that. But how do we, you know, in terms of the scale of what's required, how big do we have to go with this to start sort of taking away some of those impacts and having a more positive impact on the planet?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. And as you said, I think the impact of animal agriculture on the planet from an emissions perspective, but also land use is pretty significant. So I think, you know, fortunately, we were part of an accelerator program with Amazon a couple of years ago. And as part of that program, we partnered with an organization called Climate Kick, who's one of the EU's leading climate innovators. And we partnered with them running an impact assessment of Grub Club dog food versus a traditional meat-based dog food. So we studied the impact of one dog transitioning to Grub Club from a meat-based dog food for a year and found that that medium-sized dog could save up to 1.5 tons of CO2 equivalent emissions per year. So
per dog.
Yeah. So, you know, it's often some of the, it's interesting sometimes in the various conversations we have with our Grub Club hats on, is that people will say, you know, like, if we're really going to make an impact from a kind of global warming or climate crisis perspective, we really need big corporates and the big kind of organizations of this world to really make the material changes. However, and I may be jumping the gun towards what we'll discuss later on, but last week I caught up with Chris from Serious Tissues and we were discussing kind of all things sustainability and sustainable products. And we really touched on how the only real way to drive sustainable change is to change the way people spend their money and where they spend their money. And I think, you know, by providing them with more options, and it's not to say that everyone needs to switch to Grub Club or similar type products to see a real change. It's about giving people the opportunity and the options to change. And I think, you know, even within the human food space, there's, I can't remember it off the top of my head now, but there's that crazy statistic where even if every person in the UK did one day of no meat consumption, the results would be, you know, really significant. So it's about providing those alternatives and giving people the choice. You know, what we noticed in the pet food industry specifically was that choice wasn't quite there.
Yeah.
So we really wanted to provide that. And I think when you look at the statistics and what it means for one dog to make the switch, it starts to stack up quite significantly. And one of the things we spoke about in our Sky Zero Footprint Fund pitch was just how if we could convert just 1% of the UK's 12 million dogs, we'd be able to save up to 180,000 tons of CO2 equivalent emissions each year. And that's just 1% of dogs. So I think, you know, it's all about those marginal and incremental changes and steps towards being more sustainable.
Yeah. And it is, and like you say, it's a sizable market. You know, you've got 12 million dogs. Changing just 1% has that impact. You've not even tackled cats yet, you know, so that's another market. And I think the other thing that is, as you said, is that I remember being at the fund and talking, and very quickly, everybody who had dogs was all about, oh, well, you know, my dog. It's such a personal relationship that people have with their pets, isn't it? So like you say, it really is not just changing their behavior, but winning over the hearts and minds piece, because this has to be, is this the best product for my dog? I have a friend who's got three dogs. She caters for these dogs.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, people really do invest a lot of time and energy into the health and I suppose what their dogs are eating at the same time. And so that brings us, you know, just jumping into that then about changing the narrative and changing behavior around eating insects, because there is this element of, you know, it's insects. There are lots of health benefits, as you've talked about, and there is lots of research. But of course, that's all very research focused and lots of analysis. And so how are you, from a marketing and narrative perspective, there must be quite a bit of challenge there in you changing the narrative to say, look, here are insects, and these insects are good for your pets and good for humans. I mean, you know, that's kind of already another narrative. But for your perspective, how are you going about that from a marketing changing behavior perspective?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it is the core challenge that we face when it comes to speaking to our customers and acquiring customers. It is, like you say, the kind of perceived yuck factor around insects. But what we've found to really work and what we dial into is the health benefits and what the insects can do for a dog. Because, you know, we really dial into the success stories from our customer base, the before and after pictures. So one of the key benefits to pets from when it comes to insect protein is its hypoallergenic properties. So food intolerances and allergies are quite a big issue for a lot of pets and their owners. And that typically means, you know, certain types of diets, or for a lot of dogs and cats out there, it means pharmaceuticals, which a lot of pet owners are really not excited about the idea of giving their dog a tablet every day.
And it's expensive.
And it's super expensive.
Yeah.
Right. So if you kind of take that holistic approach of rather fix the cause than treat the problem.
Yeah.
We then really double down on those success stories. So dogs that are allergic to traditional sources of protein, like the chicken, the beef, the lamb, the salmon, etc., they'll switch to Grub Club and within a couple of weeks start seeing significant improvements to their skin conditions and gut health. And within 6 to 8 weeks, usually you're seeing dogs with, you know, really raw skin and like loss of their fur or their hair, being completely transformed, you know, from a really sad, miserable dog who's constantly itching to a dog that's really happy and being a dog. And we really just try and harness the voice of our community in that social proof to say, look, guys, you know, we understand that, but also lifting the lid on what an insect farm looks like, you know, showing people behind the scenes of what does it actually mean? What are these grubs eating? What does the process look like? I mean, I've had the both fortunate and unfortunate experience of visiting both a traditional livestock farm, if you will. I say farm with inverted commas, and an insect farm. I've visited some of our supply chain partners, both here in the UK and abroad. And the conditions in the two of those places were in very stark contrast. And while we're showing our customer base what happens behind the scenes at an insect farm, you've got people in lab coats, it's an extremely clean environment. The food that is being fed to the insect is all organic, kind of pre-consumer waste products of fruits and vegetables, unused, spent grains as a result of the or byproduct of the brewing industry. So it's all very clean ingredients, and it's done in a circular kind of zero waste system. So I think it all boils down to customer education, both combining the health benefits, but also showing people, or like debunking bugs, you know, showing people what the process looks like. Because I think people were comfortable consuming meat, for example, and a lot of people who do consume meat are aware of the issues in traditional livestock or agriculture, but choose to turn a blind eye to some of them. And I think a similar instance, we could achieve a similar state with insect farming, where people are probably aware that it's grubs, but can turn a blind eye to that because of the benefit that they get from the product. And in this case, it's, you know, everything we're saying about the hypoallergenic benefits, the gut health benefits, the nutritional benefits, as well as the sustainability benefits that it gives you as a dog owner.
Yeah. And they don't look like grubs, do they? You know, it just looks like ingredients. You know, it's just all mushed down to kind of powders, isn't it? It's not.
Yeah, I mean, our finished product looks exactly like our dog treats look exactly how you would expect a baked dog treat to look. Our food looks exactly like traditional dog food. It smells, you know, quite nutty and malty. And so, yeah, it's I mean, I think you'd be surprised how many people will make their first purchase, or we'll meet them in the park and we say we sell insect-based dog food, and they'll expect it to be a bag of bugs.
Yes.
So, you know, it's more and more data points that show us just how much customer education and work we have to do to kind of educate people out there about what our products are and what benefits they serve.
So given that you have the, you know, pet owners as your community, how do you, you know, they're a very caring community in terms of we love our pets, we know that. How do you measure some of the positive impacts of your community engagement and loyalty? Because, I mean, yeah, everybody is probably much more open to giving feedback and talking about the product.
Yeah, I mean, you know, on the kind of loyalty front, if I jump to that part of your question, you know, that is a metric that we are laser focused on every single month. And fortunately, I think broadly speaking, dog food or pet food as a category more broadly lends itself to really strong loyalty, provided you have a good product. Customers are fairly sticky and need a compelling reason to switch their dog food. So, but that being said, you know, we put a lot of effort into the content and material and communications that we send out to both prospective customers, but also existing customers, to make sure that they stay on that journey with us for as long as possible. And that ranges from, of course, all of the health and nutritional benefits, but also the sustainability benefits. You know, we sent out an email campaign towards the end of last year, giving each and every customer a personalized summary of their carbon saving as a result of their custom with Grub Club.
Cool.
So really, you know, I think it's an interesting one. If I touch on it, is we've tried to double down on health and nutrition and allowing sustainability or the sustainability side of our business to be the surprise and delight element of what we do with our customers. Because like we touched on earlier, people aren't necessarily making a dog food switch for eco-friendly reasons, or at least the mass number of, you know, most of the consumers out there wouldn't be. Of course, some of our early adopters swapped to us purely because of the environmental credentials.
Yeah.
So, you know, we will constantly communicate that. And fortunately, we've had incredible loyalty from our kind of monthly subscribers. Around 95, 96% of them stick around each month, which is fantastic and really allows us to build a business around that foundation of subscription revenue and a strong base of kind of brand evangelists, if you will. And we really double down on those people in terms of collecting their feedback. We're trying to build our business around continually gathering customer insights and feedback. So at most points of our customer journey, there's always an opportunity to either fill out a survey, leave feedback, and things like that. And that's data that we constantly monitor. And you know, we're also really happy with the kind of reviews and things like that people leave on public forums like Trustpilot, for example. Mm-hmm. So those are constantly things that we're really dialing into to see where we're doing things well, but also what can improve and what can change.
Yeah. So you're staying close to the customer, which is, you know, absolutely good for business. Everybody, you know, needs to stay, as you say, laser focused on those elements. But also, what about some of the challenges around price and price points, because there is this intention, particularly, it's interesting, Alessandra, that you said, you know, those early adopters would have switched because of the environmental impacts. And then there will be these people, there will be audiences that are starting to grow and become more conscious and are starting to look for solutions. And often more sustainable solutions are often positioned as more expensive solutions. And therefore, it isn't as sustainable for people, because they just can't, they may dive into it once, but they just think, you know, this is great, but I can't afford to stay with it. So do you find there is that tension around the price proposition?
By nature of our cost structure, we are positioned in the kind of premium segment of the market. But, you know, I think within pet food specifically, there's been an incredible move towards pet humanization, and people are really paying so much more attention to what's in their dog food. And naturally, people have premiumized to more kind of transparent ingredients and better quality pet food. That being said, you know, I think we've tried to position ourselves sometimes at the expense of where we'd want to be from a profitability perspective, but we know it's really important to make things as attainable as possible for as many people as possible. And, you know, while as I mentioned, we're on the premium side, when you compare us to kind of some of the household names we have in pet food, like the Lily's Kitchens of this world,
yep,
we are comparable and in many cases slightly cheaper. So we feel as though, you know, we of course are slightly, you know, our hands are tied behind our backs to a degree in terms of how cheap we can go. But certainly within the realm, within our playing field, we're trying to provide people with a high quality, highly nutritious product that is priced fairly and comes with all of these great sustainability benefits. And hopefully, you know, the rationale is as more investment capital and more scale comes into that insect farming supply chain, then raw materials will be cheaper or at least more accessible for us to source, which means we can pass some of those savings on and potentially create, you know, a variety of lines that could cater to different segments of the market.
But in terms of, you know, you mentioned your supply chain, partnerships and collaboration, how important are those to the whole process, and how do you manage your supply chain from a practical perspective and also in terms of codes of operation, sourcing like-minded folk to yourself and all of those parts that sit, at, you know, in the back end of what you do?
Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely critical. And I think that's where my co-founder, Hugh, has been kind of instrumental in building our business from that perspective, just in terms of, you know, as he likes to call it, taking things from bug to bowl. And, you know, partnerships and collaboration is absolutely critical. You know, when we were first setting out with, you know, almost no money in the bank, nothing but a dream, reaching out to some of the big kind of co-manufacturers, ingredient suppliers, and big players within pet food to, you know, with this wacky idea to create dog food with insect protein, it did require a bit of a leap of faith from those people to say, okay, cool, well, we will spend the time, the energy, and the resources to go through this product development cycle with you to develop these products, to launch these products, to manufacture these products, test them, etc. And I think, you know, it's really about finding people who believe in the category and what you're trying to achieve. You know, we set out with the mission to create a more sustainable pet food and alternative protein pet food, and shake that industry up. And I think, fortunately, the partners we found shared that vision in the sense that they were really willing to come on the journey with us. And naturally, you know, as a startup, we have challenges that some of their bigger clients wouldn't necessarily face on as regularly as we do. So it really is great to see that there is appetite out there for innovation from some of the more traditional operators within the segment. And you know, we're just very fortunate to have found those people relatively quickly in our journey or early on in our journey, and it's been amazing.
And I recall from the Zero Sky Fund day that you the creative that you guys came up with for your ad. I'm assuming I'm allowed to talk about this, Alessandro.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. And there was this fabulous character, this dog. Was he called Steve? Yes. And he was upset. He was having issues, not because of his food, but maybe it was his food. But he was concerned about climate change. And he was watching the telly and he was getting concerned. He was burying the owner's car keys. All these wonderful little Easter eggs, you know, these kind of like popping in little bits of brilliance. And of course, one of the solutions is the woman's talking to somebody on the park bench and says, "Oh, I don't know what's gone wrong with him. You know, he's like he's got depressed and he's getting really concerned about climate change." And then, of course, she says, "Oh, yes, that happened to my dog. And, you know, we just changed his food and made him aware that it was, you know, more climate positive and he was taking climate action." And then, of course, the dog became happy. I mean, that narrative is such a great message and marketing message and engagement. And that is bringing in the environment aspect as part of what you're doing rather than the health benefits. The health benefits in that proposition were kind of there, but secondary to actually here's a dog who's getting concerned like we all are about climate change. Is that ad going to air? Are we going to be able to see this soon?
Yeah, absolutely. We're actually currently working through things with the planning team at Sky. And we're kind of tying up the launch of the ad with one or two exciting announcements we have from a distribution perspective. So definitely stay tuned. It will be on a TV screen near you very soon.
Great.
But yes, I mean, the goal there was to communicate the kind of sustainability side of our business in a relatable way. I think all of us as humans have very real feelings and anxieties about climate change.
Yep.
And we wanted to play on the, as I mentioned earlier, that like pet humanization theme that has become so clear in the UK and globally, that dogs are a part of the family. And you know, why shouldn't dogs... you know, who's to say that they wouldn't be concerned if they did find out about it? So, you know, they probably would be. They'd probably be a little bit disappointed with how we're managing it, to be honest. So we thought that there was a really interesting theme to really plug into there. And kudos to the team at Small World and Noosa Films that kind of helped us execute on that, because I think they did an excellent job. I mean, I don't know the first thing about making a TV ad. So if it wasn't for them, we wouldn't have got there.
What's required, you know, in terms of the processing to get it to its end product?
Insect protein specifically, or?
So your product, how does it come about? How, in the terms of, you know, taking it from, as you say, bug to bowl?
Yeah. So the insects, for example, are grown in kind of these facilities. They look like large kind of warehouses or the, you know, biotech facilities essentially. And these insects, in around 14 days, you can grow a ton using around 20 square meters of land and around 30 liters of water. So about 6 flushes of your average toilet. You can grow a ton of insects in that time.
Quickly. So this is very
really
quick.
And that one ton of insects can process around 4.5 tons of organic waste. So things like potato peels, unused fruits and veg, all those things, insects will upcycle into really high quality nutrition. On a pound for pound basis, sometimes as much as twice the amount of protein per 100 grams compared to a beef steak.
Wow.
So they will, you know, and the partners we work with will source their feed products for the insects from a variety of different companies, whether it's brewers or, you know, supermarkets. You know, there's a great example here on UK shores where Morrison's was kind of feeding their chickens insects that were fed with waste products from supermarkets, for example, products that were unpurchased and beyond their use by dates as an example. So that's kind of like a case study that proves the use on the upstream side. So those insects and the combination that we, in our food, those insects will then be processed. So typically an insect farm will produce a number of different types of products. It'll either be a dried insect meal where the insects are processed and dehydrated and kind of mushed into a dry powder, kind of looks like protein powder or like, a thicker brown coarse flour. Or they'll provide oils, so insect oils. They'll process the insects to extract the oil, or in some cases, even provide the whole frozen grub. Those ingredients are then combined with, you know, some of the other ingredients in our products, like the sweet potato, the blueberries, the pomegranate, the spinach, and all these other ingredients, prebiotics to support gut health. And then depending on the format, so for example, our treats, they're hand-baked in carbon-neutral wood-fired ovens. So it's essentially a baking process with these wood chips in a carbon-neutral process. Those are baked. Some of them are softer. Some of them are a bit harder and more dry. And then our dental sticks and our food are extruded in the same way that like a breakfast cereal would be extruded. So it's kind of cooked and pressurized and extruded through a machine to produce that kind of pellet. The temperatures are a lot lower than people think they are. You know, it's... I remember a classic example of someone who spoke to me at a trade show saying, you know, if you cook this dog food before I give it to my dog, what's going to happen to the nutrition? So I said, do you cook your dinners? She said, yes. And I was like, well, I mean, that's how it works, right? So, you know, and all of our products are developed by animal nutritionists and approved by vets. And all of that is to make sure that what's coming out is a complete and balanced diet for the pet. So that product is then produced in those facilities, packed on site, and then stored in our warehouse, and ultimately ends up when people make an order or ends up on shelves around the UK. And in terms of scalability, I mean, you know, the insect farming supply chain has scaled massively over the last 3 to 5 years. And I think, you know, we have positioned ourselves in that space where we're growing with that supply chain over time. I think, yes, certainly probably a stretch for a global player like a Mars or a Nestle to have an insect protein line under a pedigree brand right now and get it into all of the distribution outlets that they have pedigree in across the globe, because the supply chain is just not quite there yet.
But it will get there.
Exactly. And our opportunity, I think, is to grow with that supply chain.
And those benefits, you know, water supply, land use, emissions reduction. And then on the demand side, you've got the health benefits and the nutrition benefits and all of those things that go with it. It's, you know, it's huge. It's everything. It ticks so many boxes, doesn't it, on the environmental positives.
Yeah, and the insect protein, I mean, pet food is just one application.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, currently we take around 3 times the amount of fish out of the ocean to feed one fish in a farm.
Yeah.
You know, so if you look at the salmon farming industry, for example, there's fundamental issues with how that works from a sustainability perspective. So. Yeah. You know, insects, I think insects can play an incredible role in fixing our global food systems, and pet food is just one example of that.
Yeah. And they're good for you.
Exactly. And they're yum.
Yeah.
I mean, I have had an insect burger, I have to say, in an insect restaurant over in St. David's, which was quite the, I mean, it just tasted like a Beyond Meat kind of burger. You know, it didn't taste any different. Once you've got all the bits in it, it was just the same. Be interesting to do some blind testing, wouldn't it? Do you know which one of these is made of insects?
Exactly.
No doubt it's the future of food. Well, we're going to need to do a whole lot of innovations, aren't we, around food security. So that's just one of them. So brilliant, Alessandra. It's fascinating. It's absolutely fascinating. I feel like I've learned so much about what you guys are doing, but also about the processes, the health benefits. So thank you for sharing that with us. And of course, this messaging and around how you are educating your audiences, which of course is what we're talking to our marketers about, is that key communication about how do we nudge different behaviors? How do we change the narrative? How do we engage people to not see things as negative or expensive or, you know, but this is this natural progression into things that we need to be progressing into that are win-win for people and planet. And can still be profitable. You know, it's still a profitable business. So
hugely profitable.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So we like to ask all of our guests the same three questions to wrap up the show. So Alessandro, our first question to you is, can marketing save the planet? What's your view on that?
Yes, I think definitely. And it kind of goes back to what I touched on earlier, stemming from my discussion with Chris last week, is ultimately, I think the way in which we'll really drive change is through changing the way in which people spend their money. That really boils down to how they marketed and how they sold certain products. So certainly, I think it's a strong yes from me.
Strong yes, we like that.
Absolutely. And Alessandro, what do you hope business looks like in 10 years' time?
I think, I hope, and it might sound very cliche, but I think I would hope for it to be more responsible and more considered. I think there's a number of different things at play globally at the moment, whether it's climate crisis, geopolitical, whatever it may be, socioeconomic, cost of living crises, etc. I think there's a role that business can play in taking steps towards alleviating all of those things. Mm-hmm. But that's not to say that there's a silver bullet in anything. And no. I think at least taking real tangible steps towards moving in the right direction is how I'd like to see business in the future. Of course, you know, it would be very easy to just say everyone's doing good and trying to save the planet, but realistically, that's not kind of something that can immediately happen. But my hope is that we have people in charge that can really help lead businesses towards being more considered, because ultimately, there will always be a need for certain industries that may be detrimental to, or at least in the short to medium term, especially within a 10-year horizon, there will be a need for industries that may not necessarily serve the greater good in every respect.
Yeah.
But as long as all of those are moving in the right direction.
That transition is required, isn't it? That focus to transition into better, for sure. And last question, if you were to give then, given all that you've learned now in your Grub Club experience, transitioning out of the finance into marketing this product and changing behaviours and talking to people, like you say, like, oh, why is this heating up? You know, is this going to ruin the nutrition? And having to have all of those answers and education and elements, what piece of advice would you give to marketers then to become more involved with organizational sustainable agendas?
It's a tough question, because I think to give such a kind of sweeping piece of advice or broad advice across so many different industries and categories, I think it's look for the small wins from a sustainability perspective. Because I think, you know, a marketer working in a place like Grub Club, I think sustainability is something we live and breathe, and our product kind of flies that flag for us. And for us, it's really about how we communicate that in the best way. Yeah. But, you know, oftentimes people will find themselves in organizations where their product may not necessarily be doing just that. It might be somewhere in the middle. It might actually be, not the best from a sustainability perspective. But there's probably steps that can be taken without, you know, risking your job or your performance KPIs, that you can take those small steps to creating minor sustainable change wherever possible. So I think it kind of goes back to that. There is no silver bullet. There's always an opportunity to make an incremental change. So I would say, you know, it doesn't, you know, start really small and build from there.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Great.
Good.
And where can our listeners find out all about Grub Club and your wonderful pet food?
So our website is mygrubclub.com. And we're across social media handles or social media channels at mygrubclub, MYGRUB club. And they'll also find us on Sky TV through 2024 if they keep an eye out. So
I'll be looking for Steve.
Exactly. So keep an eye out for Steve. That's where you can find us.
Perfect.
Well, that just leaves us to say a very big thank you, Alessandro, for joining us on the podcast. It's been great to learn more about Grub Club and absolutely. Good luck with everything. Fantastic.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me. It was an absolute pleasure.
Thank you for tuning in to the Can Marketing Save the Planet podcast. We hope that you're enjoying these conversations just as much as we are. And if you are enjoying them, then please take a moment to subscribe to the podcast channel and indeed to share the podcast with your colleagues, your friends, your family, because the more people we can get engaged in these conversations, the better. You'll find the podcast on all the usual podcast platforms, and you'll also find it on the Marketing Society podcast and the Global Player. For more information about the podcast and indeed the work we do, please visit www.canmarketingsavetheplanet.com. There you will find information about our latest books. You'll find information about our online sustainable marketing training hub and the training and advisory services that we offer. And you'll also find our Learning Zone, which is an absolute resource hub filled with all things sustainable marketing. So we look forward to hearing more from you, and we look forward to catching up soon.